Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. It's about 7 past the hour. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, the pollen has really gotten to me. So, funny voice tonight. As a matter of fact, the first 2 hours will be the usual first 2 hours. I think this third hour tonight we're going to replay an hour that we did last week. What was it about? Oh, it's about Scholastic Inc. and the what? Coal industry. That's right. And how Scholastic Inc. provided teaching material. We're doing this because two reasons. I think it was an important enough topic. It bears repeating, but also because I'm about to lose my voice. So, this hour is sponsored by Missy. Missy from Vancouver, Washington. Missy. She writes, I'm proud to sponsor Mike's program, and if you'd like to help one of the legions of unemployed, please check out my jewelry and accessories made from recycled vintage sterling flatware and other goodies. And then she gives her website here. I went to the website, and it is really nice stuff. Here's the website, Equality Uber Alles. That's right, Equality, U-B-E-R, Uber Alles, A-L-L-E-S, Equality Uber Alles dot E-T-S-Y. Like Etsy.com. EqualityUberAlles.etsy.com. Real nice looking stuff there and real affordable. Missy from Vancouver, Washington. Not British Columbia, but Washington is our first hour sponsor. Thank you, Missy. You've heard me rail against capitalism all the time, constantly, because I think it's a death-dealing, horrific, terrible system of exploitation, destruction. And, of course, most of the industrialized nations are capitalistic, where they have a mixed economy. Japan, I saw this article today about Japan. It was in the Times. And I find it not surprising. What happened, there was a lawsuit filed nearly a decade ago to shut down a nuclear power plant. And it was long considered the most dangerous nuclear power plant in Japan. It was the Hamaoka Station. And lawyers argued in attempting to shut this thing down, environmental lawyers, public interest lawyers in Japan argued that this power plant could not withstand a major earthquake that seismic research suggested was likely. And according to the lawyers, if such a quake struck, electric power could fail, along with backup generators. That would in turn cripple the cooling system. And the reactors would then suffer a meltdown and start spewing radiation into the air and sea. Tens of thousands of people in the area would be forced to flee. Now, obviously, that's what happened at the Fukushima Daiichi plant following the March 11th earthquake. But the lawsuit was filed nearly a decade ago to shut down another plant, the Hamaoka Station. And as the Times pointed out, this was one of several legal battles that were waged and lost. Sound familiar? In a long and largely futile attempt to improve nuclear safety and force Japan's power companies and nuclear regulators and courts to confront the dangers posed by earthquakes and tsunamis. And it just so happens, of course, that Japan is the entire nation of islands is on some of the world's most seismically active ground. But the lawsuits reveal a pattern in which operators, like in this case TEPCO, the one that owns Daiichi, the operators hid the dangers to avoid costly upgrades and to keep operating. Now, this is exactly what the coal industry does in this country. It's also what the nuclear industry does. The medical proof is out there for anyone who wants to see it, the environmental destruction that's being done by these power plants. And yet, media in this country, in my opinion, conspires to keep most of this from the public. If we had a watchdog media in the United States, the information that environmental groups and human interest groups and human rights groups have put together, Greenpeace, all sorts of organizations, would be out there for all of us to see so that we could at least make an informed decision. The way this is always presented is if you insist on reducing the threat to your children, your parents, your nieces and nephews, if you plan on having children, the threat to your unborn children, If the information were put out there, the risks and the dangers, then there might be a public debate, but it's never presented that way. The way it's framed is simply, if you don't go along with what we say, this is what the power industry says, or the energy industry says, if you don't go along with what we say, if you don't do it unquestioningly and keep your mouth shut, if you don't do this, there'll be all kinds of losses of jobs. People will be, more people, thrown into poverty. If you want to see that happen, go ahead. The ads that are run on television right now by the woman in black about the coal and oil industry, you've seen her. That's the claim she makes. Tens of thousands of jobs are supported by an industry that is killing every single human being on Earth and the Earth itself. And again, as long as we're talking about nuclear power, there is a nuclear reactor 93 million miles from the surface of the Earth that, if used, the power from that nuclear reactor, if used in the manner in which a lot of folks think science could use it, could produce the collection procedures, the collection technology to collect the light from the sun, the energy from the sun, there would be no need for any of this other stuff, ever. Not ever. But to find out that in Japan, the same kinds of lies, deceit, conspiracies, to deny the people of that country, who are in a much more dangerous area, according to some reports, Ring of Fire in the Western Pacific, in an area where the seismic activity is so profound that something like what happened on March 11th was bound to happen, and it will be repeated. So it's a shame. In Japan, the fact that virtually all these lawsuits lost reinforces the apparent widespread belief in Japan that a culture of collusion, corruption, lies, deceit, supporting nuclear power. And included in that culture of collusion, the government, nuclear regulators, plant operators, and now extends to the courts as well. This is how a country loses faith in its institutions, like what has happened in this country for a lot of people who still have the ability to think. It's a shame, isn't it?
Rage, Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Go to Missy from Vancouver, Washington, her website. Again, just took a quick look there. Equality Uber Alles. Just like it sounds. Equality, UberAlles, dot Etsy, ETSY, dot com. Etsy? It's not Etsy? How do you know? Okay, equalityuberalles.etsy, E-T-S-Y. If that's not Etsy, I don't know. I don't speak English anymore. .com. Anyway, she's our sponsor this first hour. She said, I'm proud to sponsor Mike's program. And if you'd like to help one of the legions of unemployed, please check out my jewelry and accessories made from recycled vintage sterling flatware and other goodies at her website. Check it out. equalityuberalles.etsy.com. Etsy, huh? I think Kathy's wrong on that one, but you know now that the head of the IMF, I usually don't do these kinds of stories unless they affect somebody in our administration, our executive branch, legislative branch, judicial branch. Well, you know, just this slimy, can't keep their pants zipped up kind of stories. But this one. Dominique Strauss-Kahn, head of the IMF, for God's sake, and had a good chance on the Socialist Party ticket to become the next premier or prime minister. What is it? Premier of France. President of France, my bad. The elections are about a year away. But he's the managing director of the International Monetary Fund. And when I heard about this yesterday, it was just like, okay, so this really only affects me in that it's another story of a man of extreme power. Power granted to him not because he's anything other than a money manipulator and a destroyer of countries with his policies, but power nonetheless, a man of extreme power who uses that power to cripple other people. And usually he cripples whole countries, but in this case it was an individual, a woman. And since the story is so common, I hate to say that, it didn't get a lot of attention from me. And but then the story started to take on a different kind of angle. Like, could it have been a setup? I don't know what that means. But that's being bandied around now by his supporters in France, who were hoping for a socialist president in the next election. Sarkozy's backers are not above suspicion, according to people in France. Of course, the people in France who are writing this are people who are backers of Dominique Strauss-Kahn. But Prairie 2, and I'm not going to have time until after the break coming back, but Prairie 2 has a bit about him. And the situation he now finds himself in. Apparently, the French are upset because Strauss-Kahn had to take a perp walk, what the media in this country now refers to as a perp walk, where he is brought before taken wherever he is held in custody and taken to the lockup and then moved again and taken before a judge. Which happens to everybody in this country. You know, the perp walk for somebody suspected of dealing cocaine or something. You know, nobody says too much about it. Somebody suspected of child abuse, nobody says anything about it. Somebody suspected of robbing a bank, you know. But this guy is one of the most powerful individuals on earth. He doesn't control the legions and the destructive power of, say, Barack Obama. But he arguably has more power. He can bring a country to its knees and, matter of fact, flatten it without firing a shot. That's power. The President of the United States, whoever that person is, has to use shock and awe and bombs and invasions and occupations. But the head of the IMF, he's capable of doing the kind of damage that one associates with an invasion simply by withholding funds and letting a country sink beneath the waves financially and then politically and then socially. A little bit on this when we come back from Prairie 2. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Before the hour. All right. Dominic Strauss-Kahn, the head of the Socialist, well, not the head of the Socialist Party, but a Socialist candidate for president who was, by all assumptions, going to become the next president of France, and the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, has been arrested and charged with sexual assault in New York against a woman who worked at the hotel where Strauss-Kahn was staying. Prairie 2 writes, IMF DSK SOB. Dominic Strauss-Kahn, a man so important that in most of the world he's known simply as DSK. Not exactly a household name in the U.S., but we haven't been reduced to begging for a handout like the other third world countries where he could rape one of the servants and nobody would notice. He jumped the gun a little because, you know, we don't know our place here. Any jet-setting right-winger could have told him to just hop down to, oh, the Dominican Republic if he needed a little taste of the good life. Conspiracy theories abound now that somebody took him out to send a message or to grab power for themselves. Indeed, there are a number of people who could potentially gain from his spending the next 5 to 15 years in a dark cell. Most of these people normally just arrange a plane crash or send in somebody to shoot you in the head instead of such a convoluted plot to frame a guy for a felony. But maybe they just wanted to have a little fun with him. Or maybe DSK really is just a sociopath. Okay, there isn't any maybe about it. People like him are all sociopaths. Raping, looting, and pillaging is what gets them hot. And they do it every day to whole countries. He just couldn't resist doing it in person. It seems ex-Senator John Ensign, the Republican of Nevada, was of the same persuasion. As it turns out, his widely reported affair with a staffer was really raped by extortion, and he's likely to do prison time for the cover-up. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has snubbed the Tea Party by giving Ensign's plum committee appointments to anybody but Tea Party favorites, even strong-arming a reluctant senator to take an extra committee post. McConnell also bypassed Rand Paul to give a Finance Committee seat to someone with even less seniority. We hit the debt ceiling today. And now we're operating the United States of America by robbing Peter to pay Paul. The Treasury is using a number of tricks normally reserved for Republicans to cook the books. They stopped paying into pension plans and are emptying the trust funds. They also have a cool $100 million on deposit over at the Federal Reserve, you know, an account they didn't tell the husband about. Lucy, you've got some splaining to do. One thing about this that is a concern is that they aren't really going to stop borrowing because treasuries are constantly coming due and payable, so new ones will be sold to reissue the debt. This could trigger a sudden rise in interest rates and spiral out of control rather quickly. If the U.S. had to start paying 17% interest, like during the Reagan years, it would be a problem. On $14 trillion, that's $2.38 trillion or more than the current budget. Even the normal 5% interest would be $700 billion a year or more than the official Pentagon budget. They've been paying far less, averaging only $200 billion per year in interest, or less than 2%. Some Treasury bonds are paying negative interest. The buyer is paying for the privilege of having a safe haven to park his money. Capitalism, Jesus. The Republicans have a point that this is getting out of hand, but of course this has been their game plan all along. The thing is that maybe the maid won't put up with being raped this time. Maybe Obama will use his new standing as a man of action to do something strategic, like raising taxes on the rich instead of borrowing from them. And we can't go to the IMF for a loan. The guy that writes the check, he's in jail. PrairieNumeral2.com. Yeah. Well, it does look like a perfect setup, doesn't it? Sarkozy, the French president, was... he's not very popular, I guess, in France. And the socialist politician Jean-Christophe Cambadélis, a close ally of Mr. Strauss-Kahn, said, quote, "In the file, there are a lot of contradictions, beginning with the escape, which was acknowledged today, didn't happen," end quote. The story is that Strauss-Kahn... two stories out there already. One was that nothing happened. He left the hotel hurriedly to go meet his daughter, who is a graduate student at Columbia University, for lunch, and had lunch, and then boarded the plane. The other story is that he hurriedly left the hotel after sexually assaulting an employee. So now they have a file, and the socialist politician said, "In the file, there are a lot of contradictions, beginning with the escape, which was acknowledged today, didn't happen." On the website of rmc.fr, it's a French website, radio site, they claim to cite information from Mr. Strauss-Kahn's lawyers, and the writers at this website laid out the shape of an alibi, that he checked out of a hotel around 12:30, returned his keys to a reception, met his daughter for lunch before going to the airport, where he realized he had lost one of his cell phones, called the hotel to ask that it be returned to him at the airport. The New York police originally estimated the time of the alleged attack on the maid at about 1 p.m. They have since revised it to around noon. So see, here you go. Here you go. Whatever is in the initial report, when the truth is still being sorted out, it's an argument for everybody just shutting the hell up. The cops first said that this attack on the maid occurred around 1 p.m. Well, there is proof that he checked out at 12:30. Oh, well, very simple. The police just revise it and say, "Well, okay, we made a mistake. He really checked out at earlier, around noon." So the rape either. It makes it even more difficult. I don't even know if it was a rape, sexual assault, more difficult to happen, or he was still there, or he wasn't, or whatever. And the only reason that this is intriguing to me is because, I don't know why, I guess because he is a very powerful capitalist who has no pity in destroying countries, none whatsoever. Yeah, I mean, he's the head of the IMF. Jesus. I mean, the IMF has never taken pity on anybody, anytime, anywhere, anyhow, any way. So to see someone who is arguably more powerful than the President of the United States, at least in terms of doing things where there are no real fingerprints, You know, anytime a president of the United States decides to attack a country or occupy a country or bomb a country or invade a country, they put it on television. This guy, or not necessarily this guy, but the head of the IMF and the IMF itself, and I guess to a greater or lesser degree, the World Bank, they can do things to advance neoliberalism, which is capitalism with no restraints. They can do things that are difficult for common folk like moi and you to ever know about, much less understand. So that's the part, I guess. I'm not sure. A criminal assault is, I hate to say it, but it's so common, it doesn't make any difference. Criminal sexual assault, it doesn't make any difference. The society, the culture, the race of the people involved, the religion of the people involved, that's immaterial. And it is as common as any other form of violence, right? I don't know. Strange times. Well, it all ends on Saturday. Right. Yeah, we all got to... Somebody, where did I see this? Somebody sent this to me. You want to have some fun on Saturday night, when the rapture doesn't really happen, go to your, around midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, go to your local church, and outside the church, put piles of clothing around, and maybe like an empty baby stroller, maybe some eyeglasses, a briefcase, you know, little piles of clothing. So when people come to church Sunday morning, they'll think they were left behind. There's some sick people out there. I mean, the ones believing in the rapture. Oh, well, we'll be right back. Be a socialist. I have no idea, John. I just read the stories that cross my desk. I don't know. Prairie 2, you want to answer? You know, when I read that this whole sordid mess over the past couple of days, I was thinking the same thing. Oh, maybe it's because he's not a real socialist. I don't know. Who knows anymore from anything? Did you hear about this? What's your name? Bachman has been challenged. This is great. Cherry Hill High School in New Jersey, in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Kid there. Well, not a kid. She is a sophomore attending Cherry Hill High School. She has challenged Michelle Bachman to a public debate and fact test on the Constitution. You go, girl. Here's the text of the letter. This is at CNN. Dear Representative Bachman, my name is Amy Myers. I am a Cherry Hill, New Jersey sophomore attending Cherry Hill High School East. As a typical high school student, I found quite a few of your statements regarding the Constitution of the United States, the quality of public school education, and general U.S. civics matters to be factually incorrect, inaccurately applied, or grossly distorted. The frequency and scope of these comments prompted me to write this letter. Though I am not in your home district, or even in your home state, you are a United States representative of some prominence who is subject to national media coverage. News outlets and websites across this country profile your causes and viewpoints on a regular basis. As one of a handful of women in Congress, you hold a distinct privilege and responsibility to better represent your gender nationally. The statements you make help to serve an injustice to not only the position of Congresswomen, but women everywhere. Though politically expedient, incorrect comments cast a shadow on your person and, by unfortunate proxy, both your supporters and detractors alike often generalize this shadow to women as a whole. Representative Bachman, the frequent inability you have shown to accurately and factually present even the most basic information about the United States led me to submit the following challenge, pitting my public education against your advanced legal education. I, Amy Myers, do hereby challenge Representative Michelle Bachman to a public forum debate and or fact test on the Constitution of the United States, United States history, and United States civics. Hopefully, we will be able to meet for such an event, as it would prove to be enlightening. Sincerely yours, Amy Myers. You go, girl. How about that? Now, I wonder, in the next couple of days, let's see if media picks up on this. They probably will, because this is one of those stories that gets their attention. You know, the slaughter of thousands is not all that interesting. The uprising now that is apparently occurring in the Palestinian territories is not that newsworthy. But this is. And I'm not trying to minimize Amy Myers' challenge. I think this high school sophomore probably has more wisdom in her little finger than Michelle Bachman has honesty in her entire being. But we'll see what happens. Do you suppose Michelle Bachman is going to respond to a challenge from, what's a high school sophomore, 15, 16 max? What do you say, Representative Bachman? Huh? I know some of your supporters are listening because the station or this program is carried on KTNF in Minneapolis, St. Paul. So some of your supporters, if unaware of this story, which I'm sure they're not, I'm sure all of your money bags and the liars and deceivers and scum that do support you are fully aware of this young lady's challenge. But in case they're not, they happen to be listening to this program, as so many of Bachman's supporters do in Minnesota. What's that goddamn lawyer talking about tonight? You know, he doesn't even believe in God. So for those of you who are listening, pass the word on to your toxic representative that she has been called out by a high school sophomore. And in a manner that Michelle Bachman possibly will not be able to respond. To which she'll not be able to respond. Because Bachman is a moron. She really is. She is functionally illiterate where it concerns her job, the venue in which she works, the United States Congress. She is functionally illiterate where it concerns the Constitution of the United States. But then again, so are her followers. That's why she gets elected and reelected. But Michelle Bachman, 15-year-old girl, or a sophomore in high school, 15 or 16, has challenged you to a debate and or a civics test. What do you say, you teabag freak? Are you willing to rise to the challenge of a teenager? Or are you going to pretend like you didn't hear it? we'll see fairly soon, won't we? But stick around. I'm Mike Malloy, second hour coming up. Sponsored by Missy from Vancouver, Washington. Her website is equalityuberalice.etsy.com. Check out her jewelry in case you haven't. Vintage jewelry and accessories made from recycled vintage sterling flatware. This hour is sponsored by Paul. Paul, I can't pronounce your last name. I don't want to try. Here's his message. I wrote the song The Oil Conundrum part-time while listening during evenings and also during the Gene and Sam and Mark Maron programs. It's free via Google if you want to understand how a truth seeker thinks. Okay, look it up. The Oil Conundrum. Thanks, Paul. We have to ask people when they sponsor an hour, just for my benefit, because I'm not that good with names, as you all know. If your name is the least bit difficult to pronounce, send us a phonetic spelling. Anyway, Paul is our sponsor. Check out The Oil Conundrum, C-O-N-U-N-D-R-U-M. Google it. We're going to open up the lines. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to comment. 877-996-2556. Prairie 2 writes, regarding the socialist, you know, how can a socialist be the head of the IMF? Prairie 2 writes, socialist in France, at least for this party, is more like corporate Democrat here. Also, this guy is a sociopath. In addition to being a socialist, the IMF does pretend it is helping the countries it bails out, even though their first demand is to end anything resembling socialism, kind of like corporate Democrats here. They all have the same goal, neo-feudalism. Serving girls and boys, beware. Yeah. A socialist in France is like a Democrat here. You know, speaking of that, when I was watching some of the hearings last week of the oil barons, the CEOs of the five big oil companies, more or less saying, we want to continue with our little form of socialism. Right. We want money from the public. We want contributions from the public. That's what our tax advantages are all about. Our depletion allowances, our incentives to go drill more oil. We want benefits from the public. We are socialists when it comes to sucking up the money, and we are capitalists when it comes to distributing the money. But you know, I watched that, and I just, oh, and the tobacco executives are the same way, and Donald Trump and the rest of these predatory lice cockroaches, they're all the same way. And if you give it any thought at all, and it's a waste of time to consider why they are the way they are, but it occurred to me, they don't see they're doing anything wrong. There is zero morality in the mind of Donald Trump or the CEOs of the oil companies or the tobacco companies. They are so far beyond any kind of a moral stance on anything. That's why they are capitalist and why they are CEOs. If there was even a shred of an understanding of ethical conduct, just a faint echo of morals or morality echoing around inside these predatory bastards' heads, they wouldn't do this. They wouldn't behave the way they behave, but such a thing doesn't exist. This is what you get. It's kind of like an Eichmann, totally unconcerned, just a functionary. You know, this is what I'm to do. I'm to increase the number of dead Jewish people. And capitalist CEOs pretty much say the same thing. This is what I am to do. At the expense of anybody and everybody, I am to increase the profits for my companies. It doesn't make any difference. Let's see how quickly that winds up on the right-wing blog sites. All right, Kathy, what do you want to bet? Tomorrow afternoon, Malloy compares corporate CEOs to Adolf Eichmann. You're right. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. So put it out there, you right-wing vermin. I need some more publicity. But it's essentially, if one is to believe Hannah Arendt, who wrote about Eichmann and the trial, the banality of evil, when I watch the corporate CEOs of these massive companies that cause death and destruction and planetary pollution, you know, think about tobacco executives. They kill 500,000 people a year in this country. What is it? 5, 6, 7 million a year around the globe. Now, a lot of people say, well, Malloy, you know, that's part of population control. Don't worry about it. It's a good thing. And then you think about the corporate CEOs of the energy industry who destroy, I mean, pick something that they don't destroy. So the comparison to Eichmann or any functionary within the Nazi hierarchy or the communist hierarchy, same thing. When the Berlin Wall came down and all of a sudden Eastern Europe, the curtain that had been drawn across Eastern Europe was drawn back, and people could see the destruction that the workers' paradise had wrought against the companies or the countries that had occupied, the horrific environmental destruction, just pounding the earth into a shapeless, filthy, bloody mass of pollution and dirt and death and destruction. But anyway, the comparison to me between Eichmann as a example of banality of evil. Now, if you're Jewish and you want to send me an email and say, how dare you, you know, compare someone who murdered 6 million Jews to a corporate CEO, go ahead. You know, it doesn't matter to me. You can send as many emails as you like. But the comparison for me works. The banality of evil. Tobacco industry, if they have caused 500,000 deaths in 50 years each year, that's 25 million dead just in the United States. So you tell me if there's a comparison. Brad is in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hey, Brad.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Listen, I just wanted you to catch the news that head prosecutor in the World Court is looking for the indictment of Gaddafi on war crimes.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't read into it very far, but I saw the headline today, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just telling Kathy there, I don't know, it must have been 4 or 5 years ago. I went to the website of the World Court. I found an email address for them, and I wrote off a big letter saying, why don't they indict Bush, Rumsfeld, and Cheney on war crimes, eh? And it was quite a big letter I sent, detailing the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
Never ever got an answer.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you ever got a reply.
No, not even a form letter saying they received my email. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. You're not surprised, are you?
Oh, no. What would you call it? Excited frustration.
I hear you.
I just got one other question.
Sure.
I'm from Calgary, Alberta. I'm a trucker, so I don't catch up on the news that often except when I hear a serious laugh.
Hey, Brad, hold your question just 1 second, because I got to do a break. I'll come back right after the break and get your question. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Conundrum. Find it on Google. You wrote a part-time while listening during evenings to this program and also during Jeanine Garofalo and Sam's song, or program. And Mark Maron, I'm on Air America, all this, of course. It's free, the song, via Google if you want to understand how a truth seeker thinks. Thank you, Paul. All right, we're talking with Brad in Calgary, Alberta. All right, your question, Brad.
Yeah, Mike, I was just wondering, is anybody actively investigating Sean Hannity and his so-called phony charity that seems to enrich him and his family so much?
I think all that was ignored by media and the few people who did talk about it. I mentioned on this program a couple of times.
Yeah, I got it from you, actually.
I don't think anything is happening with that, no. That's the scam to greater or lesser degrees, also involves Oliver North and the rest of these.
Oh yeah, I know.
Psychopaths.
Maybe them SEALs now, but they're not doing nothing to go pay a visit to them. That'd be funny.
It'd probably be more than funny. All right, Brad. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Jeff is in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Jeff.
Ahoy, Malloy.
How you doing?
I'm all right. Speaking on the subject of sociopaths, scams, and swindlers,
yeah,
I have a little breaking news for you. I saw it on Media Matters. It turns out old Bexter is going to have a little gathering in Jerusalem this August.
Oh, I know. Well, he's there. He's there because he has had a total break with reality. This guy is so insane. And I don't know, I guess he's there to confront evil, kind of like The Exorcist or something. I don't know what this psycho bastard is doing. He's out of his mind. Beck has become a cartoon character, and I think that's the only way to look at him. He's got a lot of followers who are willing to give over pieces of their mind and their money. But he's a sociopath.
It just screams of Jonestown to me.
Well, it does. It does. And while he's over there, some ardent fundamentalist person who a Jewish fundamentalist just might decide that Glenn Beck is perverting their religious, you know, their religious shrines or what have you, and decide that Glenn Beck needs to go meet his master.
Yeah, more than likely, for that scenario, I've seen pictures of it. Usually you see a bunch of, they'll probably be ultra-Orthodox rabbis throwing rocks at this guy.
Well, one can hope. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's happened before. I mean, they've done it with other certain events that weren't up to their standards. So,
well,
who knows?
Yeah, Glenn Beck. I don't think Glenn Beck is up to any standards whatsoever. He's another one of those one of those amoral swine. And if the ultra-Orthodox in Israel who are interested in their holy sites have any respect for the religious... their religious orders and their religion, they will make sure that Glenn Beck discovers that he's not the least bit welcome. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you checking in. Jason is in San Jose. Hey, Jason.
Yeah, hey, Mike. Hey, regarding this, dude from the IMF, Mr. Strauss-Kahn, I hear you going after him, and I hear this Mr. Prairie, too. I love his essays, by the way. They're fantastic. But, I mean, I hear you guys kind of jumping on this guy, and, you know, I'm not defending the IMF, and I'm not defending him. I mean, as far as him being a socialist, I mean, what kind of socialist spends $3,000 a night on a hotel room? I mean...
Right. Well, as Prairie, too, said, there's a difference in... defining the terms. No, I understand what you're saying. Here's the problem, though. This guy has a history of sexual violence against women. The media in France, who tend as a group or as an enterprise, they tend to look at this and giggle and hoot and holler. Look at Berlusconi in Italy. It's not just France. I mean, it's across Europe. They see this entirely differently from the way we may or may not see it. But I hear what you're saying, and you're absolutely right. He is under our system. He's innocent until proven guilty.
He needs his due process. I understand that there's a history.
Right.
According to what I've seen so far, there's one report of possible violence. The woman waited 5 years to report it. I'm not doubting the veracity of that, and I'm not trying to diminish the issue with sexual violence toward women. It's a very real problem. But there's also, it's very possible that this guy was either set up politically. I mean, we've seen what the right-wingers will do in this country.
Sure.
They'll win at all costs. You know, I wouldn't put it past the right-wingers in Europe either. Or it could just be maybe this woman is setting him up. You know, if it gets tossed out of criminal court, she'll take it to civil court. Much lower bar of,
Proof. Yeah, yeah. Well, I hear you loud and clear, Jason, and I tried, maybe not hard enough, but tried to minimize the reports of his assault, or his alleged assault. Like I say, I don't find those stories very attractive, and go after the idea, here's a capitalist, international, globalist, who feels he can get away with things if this is the case. But I hear you. Thanks, Jason. I got a boogie. Appreciate your call.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Paul. And like I said, Paul, I'm not going to tell you your last name. He has a message. He wrote the song The Oil Conundrum. And he wrote it while listening to this program. Janine and Sam. Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar, of course, and Mark Maron. You can hear this free via Google if you want to understand how a truth seeker thinks. Paul writes. So look it up. The oil conundrum. Thanks, Paul. Before I come back to your calls, and we have an open line here, 996-2556 if you want to call in. Before we, 877-996-2556. You know, this laryngitis is also eating its way into my brain. Third hour tonight will be a repeat of an hour we did last week on Scholastic Inc., that provides a lot of materials for school children. And the material they provided regarding the coal industry. Anyway, Hernan, who does a lot of work for us on YouTube, put together a whole Mike Malloy section on that website, YouTube, and hangs out in the infamous Malloy chat room and Skype location on Ustream. He sent the Hernan, who lives in Buenos Aires, Argentina. He sent this to me. Argentina's Congress has passed a sweeping health care bill that will expand the federal government's oversight of health insurance companies. This is in Argentina. In a move that critics say might bankrupt the private medical system. Yay! With 190 votes in favor, none against, and about 30 abstentions, the lower house passed the bill last week. The Senate already approved the legislation. Now, according to the to Dow Jones, you know, the Dow Jones Newswire is owned by Murdoch. The most onerous provisions would force health insurers to accept clients with pre-existing medical conditions. Oh, no. Force companies to provide full care from the first day of coverage. Oh, no. And freeze premiums for clients over the age of 65 who have been insured for at least 10 years. Oh, no. You mean they'll have to really be in the business of providing health insurance. According to the Dow Jones Newswire, the government also will vet premium increases and set the minimum fees the insurers must pay to medical care providers. Oh, no! You mean their profits are going to go from hundreds of billions down to maybe tens of millions? Oh, no! The populist government of President Cristina Fernandez has expanded the state's role in the economy in recent years by nationalizing the private pension industry and putting regulatory pressure on businesses. Oh, no! Argentina has a multi-layered system of providing medical care. The national health system, yeah, they have it there, provides taxpayer-funded services to all, but many residents purchase insurance policies that give them access to a world-class level of care. About 4.5 million Argentines, or about 11% of the population, buy these policies, according to the industry. President Fernandez nationalized the pension system at the peak of the 2008-2009 global financial crisis. Amid accusations that the companies were charging excessive fees and providing little in return. You go, You go, President of Argentina. Hernan signs off by saying, so we have universal health care, plus the possibility of buying private insurance, plus Social Security for the unemployed, plus coverage for children and older people that is untouchable. So much for the third world. Hernan. Oh, no. Health insurers have to accept clients with pre-existing medical conditions. You don't like that? Then close up shop and get the hell out of business. Isn't that simple? See, if I were king of America for a day, that's what I would say to these massive, predatory, vampire-like health insurance companies. You don't like the provisions in Malloy socialism, then leave. I mean, private health insurance companies intervening between a doctor and a patient, intervening in terms of what the doctor can prescribe as far as treatment. Now, one would hope that medical boards would explain to doctors, look, you know, when you have a patient that comes in here and every time they come in for blood work or whatever, they want a, you know, the CAT scan, you're going to have to tell them you don't need the CAT scan. Okay? My internist, my family doctor, the guy I go to about every 6 months just for, you know, checkup, he keeps eliminating the tests that that I think I need. You know, he just does. Last time I was in there, he said, okay, I'll go ahead and give you a blood cholesterol test, but your cholesterol was one, what was it, Kathy, 110 last time? He said, okay, I'll go ahead and do a blood panel on you, but everything checked out. You're a little anemic, but... And that's the kind of doctor. I mean, my doctor is always telling me, and, you know, my insurance covers all this, but he keeps saying, you know, you don't need these tests. You just don't need them. The recommendations that, for example, a PSA test for a prostate-specific antigen, he said you don't need to do it every year. If you don't have any symptoms, forget about it. Every male, if he lived long enough, would probably eventually die of prostate cancer, but he might have to live to be 130. So, I've been going to this guy for 10 years. Take his advice. And that's one way to keep medical costs down. My doc will tell me, he said, you know, I have people that come in here and they might have a headache or something going on and they want a brain scan instead of just taking, a couple of aspirin or whatever. I don't know what people take for headaches anymore. I really don't. But you get my drift. Charles is in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Hello, Charles.
Hi, good evening there, Mike. It's been a long time since I talked to you from Tucumcari, New Mexico.
Oh, my God, that's true. That's very true.
I've tried. It just sometimes I just keep hitting these little bumps where I lose my phone signal.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have found two things after intense research and a lot of thinking, and, of course, that explains the smoke in the truck. There are two things that CEOs will never damage.
And what are they?
One is their profit margin, and the other is their bonuses.
Yeah, that's true.
They are the only things, as far as I could see, that they will never damage, and Argentina was an example of it. If you just heard it over there, how they were complaining about how it will bankrupt everybody.
Right.
Of course, anything that's good for the people is always considered to be bad for business, and that's not necessarily always the case.
No, it's not.
In fact, it's very rarely the case, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I don't think that health insurance is the business of private enterprise. It's insane. If you're going to have something called universal health insurance, then the first word there pretty much explains it. Universal, that means everybody contributes, and everybody gets to use the service when they need it. It is so simple. If a society like ours and others decides to put a second layer in there between the doctor and the patient, and that layer is private enterprise, I mean, that's madness, because the function, we talked about this last week, the function of a health insurance company is not to pay your bills when you have to have a procedure. It is not to offer you advice so that you'll stay healthy. The function of a health insurance company is to make a profit, period. I mean, that's it.
That's all they do.
Yeah.
And of course, for primary health care and every other major industrialized country in the world, it's illegal for a for-profit health care company to offer to have primary health care. They have to be non-profit, or at least their primary health care has to be non-profit.
Mm. Well, you know, when they talk about reform in this country, and of course, this is where our Democratic president dropped the ball. There should have been a public option, or what there really should have been was a chance for Americans to vote in a national health care service like other civilized countries have. Charles, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. Don't be a stranger. We'll talk again. It has been sponsored by Paul. And like I said earlier, Paul, I'm a little bit hesitant to try to pronounce your last name, but thank you. He wrote the song The Oil Conundrum part-time while listening during evenings to this program, and also Janine and Sam back in the Air America days, and Mark Maron. The song is free via Google if you want to understand, he writes, how a truth seeker thinks. So go to Google and type in The Oil Conundrum. Oh, and don't forget, our first hour sponsor, Missy from Vancouver, Washington. Great website. She's got some good stuff there, and it's very affordable. Equality, Uber, Alice. Equality, UberAlles, dot Etsy, ETSY. Kathy says dot Etsy, Etsy.com. Check out both of these sponsors, if you would. And thanks to both of you. Jeremy is in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike. I guess Donald Trump had enough today.
Well, that was, I mean, we know why he was there. We know why he pretended like he was going to run for president. He is such a, just a zero. I mean, he's not even a good capitalist.
Oh, he was looking for his 15 minutes of fame that he's had over and over and over again.
Yeah, he's just insatiable, you know, and we've tried to pump up the ratings for his NBC program. Apparently he did. You know, NBC now is owned by the same people who own Comcast. And what did I hear today? He signed a $40 million contract to continue. $40 million for what?
So he can bankrupt another casino.
Is that what it is?
Probably something like that. I also want to mention this guy from the IMF. It kind of reeks of that story that Dog the Bounty Hunter got caught up in a couple of years ago.
Oh, no.
The guy that was...
What story is that?
do you remember the guy who was the Max Factor heir? He committed a couple of rapes in the United States. He was convicted and was given a life sentence, but it was to be started sometime in the future, like a month later. He skipped down to Mexico.
Yeah.
Dog the Bounty Hunter went after him, caught him, and got in big trouble with the Mexican authorities because he pulled him out and they said it was extraditing without their permission. But I'm just saying it reeks of the same air that a rich guy goes and does something like this. I don't think it was a setup. I think he did it, and now his people are trying to say he didn't do it.
Huh. Well, these people irritate the hell out of me anyway. I mean, and just having to read about them and what they consider to be, I don't know, their rights. You know, I had a caller earlier tonight said, you know, don't convict the guy, until he's had his day in court. And sure, I completely agree with that in principle, but it pretty much doesn't happen anymore, does it? I mean, as soon as somebody is busted and their nasty, sordid past comes tumbling out, It is not uncommon for folks to say, well, you know, he's done it before. Why wouldn't he have done it this time? Especially when you consider, you know, it was Kissinger that said power is the greatest aphrodisiac. He meant for himself. He didn't necessarily, I don't know, maybe he meant for people who didn't have the power, whether they're men or women. I have no idea. It just, the whole thing stinks. The whole thing just reeks of abuse and, you know, power tripping somebody. And, I know enough, not a whole lot, but I know enough about the IMF and the World Bank to know that they have no problem setting up economic situations that cause people to die, lots of people to die, countries to be dismembered, governments to fall. They're just predatory sons of bitches, every single one of them. And I tell me something good the IMF has ever done.
I can't think of anything myself. So.
There must be something. There must be something. These are both, I think they are both constructs, the World Bank and the IMF, constructs of American capitalism. Maybe not. Maybe the global capitalism. I don't know. It's just, the whole thing is sickening after a while. You know what I'm saying?
That's kind of like saying, tell me what a neocon has done good in the last 20 years.
Well, there you go. There you go. All right.
That's all I got, Mike.
Thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Paul's The Oil Conundrum, I guess that's also a book. It says here, I wrote the song, The Oil Conundrum, part-time. But I got an email from Paul that says, actually, it's a book. Well, cool. then find it and read it instead of finding it and listening to it. The Oil Conundrum. All right. What else we got? We don't have that much because we don't have that much time left. Third hour tonight is a repeat from last week, a company, Scholastic Incorporated, which has, you know, it's another corporate predator that has invaded the public classroom. Scholastic Inc. used to be, I think, used to be a fairly innocuous organization that would provide teaching materials for classrooms. But like so much in this country, it has been devoured by corporate America. And their latest enterprise was teaching materials that explains how wonderful the coal industry is without explaining about mountaintop removal, black lung, collapsed mines, death, destruction, acid rain, pollutants that are flooding the planet. So stick around. Third hour coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. In my notes here, I have three words. Nasty, insidious, lies. Nasty, insidious, lies. Wow. What do you suppose that's all about? George W. Bush, Barack Obama's promises. I don't know. Now, this is about something even worse, in my opinion. A lot of talk here lately about education and school teachers and so on and so forth, and how education in this country is in the toilet. We rank all of a sudden way down the list where it concerns science and math, especially the applied sciences. You know, because the applied sciences or the hard scientists, whatever you want to call it, conflicts with religious nonsense. And the biggest state in the union, Texas, in terms of their school book purchases, the state of Texas can pretty much dictate what is going to be contained in certain school textbooks. That's because they spend a lot of money. And textbook publishers, of course, are only interested in money. They are not the least bit interested in educating children. When educating children is placed on this side of the ledger and making a profit is placed on that side of the ledger with the school textbook publishers, the making a profit side wins every time. Don't kid yourself. Now, up to the immediate past, I'm talking within the past decade, you might say that the school textbook publishers were only influenced by boards of education, usually state boards of education. The state boards of education would sit down and decide how much truth they wanted their kids in their school systems to learn and how much nonsense they wanted their children to learn where it concerned religious dogma or religious superstition. And in the immediate past, there would usually be the number of members of the board, state school boards, that were rational usually outnumbered the number who were irrational and promoted religious bigotry, dogmatism, and catmatism. No, just kidding. And superstition. But a new wrinkle now, relatively new, and that is the corporate sponsorship of your child and my child's education. Corporate sponsorship. Now, part of this comes from the fact that we Americans are lazy, disinterested citizens. We have no interest in the kind of government that takes over. We just don't care anymore. We haven't cared for a long time. We don't go vote. And when we do go vote, even though we know that the voting machines are rigged, we don't do anything about it. We don't ask for paper ballots. We just go, oh, okay, the voting machines are rigged. Oh, I don't care. We don't care what kind of duplicity and lies and deceit goes on at the highest levels of government. We just don't care anymore. And we don't care about how our kids are educated. We just want little tykes out of our way from, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon. And the kid better bring home good grades. We don't care how. What, help with the homework? Are you kidding me? I'm busy. I got things to do. We just don't care. Well, corporate America does care. They want to produce a race of consumers not unlike the consumers in Brave New World, but without the genetic manipulation. Yet. I mean, eventually that'll come, but not quite yet. There's an organization called the American Coal Foundation. And it is doing something that is pretty horrific. It's working in conjunction with a capitalist corporatist organization that wants to destroy your child. That organization is called Scholastic Incorporated. Scholastic Incorporated. These two working together, the American Coal Foundation and Scholastic Incorporated, are perpetrating the kind of insidious, what did I write down? Yeah, nasty, insidious propaganda, filling our little kid's head with lies. And you know what? You and I don't care. We don't care. Go ahead, fill them with lies. We don't give a damn. We allow our kids to eat stuff like Sugar Smacks or whatever the hell, Cap'n Crunch. You know, we allow our kids to eat crap. We allow our kids to be exposed to carcinogens and poisons and pollutants. And then we scream and go insane when we give birth to kids with autism or ADHD or all sorts of developmental problems. We run around with our hair on fire and we blame things like, oh, I know, vaccines. When in fact, I don't know if it's fact or not, but in my opinion, we have set up an environment where we are destroying everything we touch. But we don't care. I mean, we're too busy playing with our iPods or iPads or iPunks or eyeballs or whatever. You know, we just don't care. We really don't. We don't care who goes to Washington to represent us. We don't care how corporate America is taking over. We don't care how the capitalists are destroying everything that this country might have been. We don't care that the tobacco industries, that the coal industries, that the energy industries, that the nuclear industries, we don't care. We don't give a goddamn, because if we did, you see, we'd do something. And we do nothing. We do nothing. Absolutely nothing. So, Scholastic Incorporated and the American Coal Foundation, they're doing something. Oh, yes. Now, there are three advocacy groups who are trying to fight back. Very tiny, underfunded, small groups of, oh, isn't this a quaint term? Concerned citizens. Remember when every American was a concerned citizen? Or did that never happen? Am I just imagining a past that never existed? I guess so. But it seems to me at one time, for a brief shining moment, everybody in this country was a concerned citizen. We were concerned about what was going on, but no longer. We just don't care anymore. Anyway, there are three advocacy groups: Rethinking Schools, Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, and Friends of the Earth. These three, small, underfunded, labeled by the right wing as being subversive or communist or fascist or socialist or anti-American or anti-business or anti-jobs, these three organizations are trying to fight back with a letter writing campaign against Scholastic Incorporated and the American Coal Foundation. Now, what have they done? Well, Scholastic Incorporated has been distributing materials in fourth grades that the American Coal Foundation paid Scholastic Inc. to develop. You're way ahead of me on this one, aren't you, right? The three groups say that Scholastic Inc.'s little package called United States of Energy. Excuse me. United States of Energy package gives children a one-sided view of coal, failing completely to mention the negative effects on the environment and human health. Now, as reported in today's New York Times, the curriculum that coal has put together is called unfit for fourth graders by these three tiny, underfunded, underpopulated advocacy groups that are trying to fight back. Now, what is the objective of Scholastic Inc. and the American Coal Foundation, and how are these three groups trying to fight back? Stick around.
practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I saw the story, as reported in this morning's New York Times, that I put notations around it. Nasty, insidious, lies. Scholastic Incorporated, working with the American Coal Foundation, has put together something for fourth grade school kids' curriculum materials that talks about the wonderful advantages of a coal-based society and none of the negative effects on the environment or human health. This company, Scholastic Inc., was not available for comment when questioned by the Times. Anyway, Scholastic Inc.'s in-school marketing division, which produced this curriculum in partnership with the Coal Foundation, often works with corporate America. It does things to undermine and destroy the very premise on which you send your child to school, and that is to get an objective, commercial-free product, unendorsed education. You know, isn't that why you send your kid to school? I mean, that's why I send mine to school. Let's see, English, grammar, foreign language, math, appropriate to the age, social studies, appropriate to the age, you know, art, music, science, isn't that? No, your child goes to school now, he or she is inundated in a very subtle and insidious, that's why I wrote that word down, way. A particular corporate point of view is being injected into little Bobby or little Susie's head. This is simply not right. But like I said before, we don't care. I mean, this goes on. We don't care. We have divorced ourselves from this whole system. Anyway, the programs put together by Scholastic's in-school marketing division. The programs are, quote, this is according to the company website, quote, designed to promote client objectives and meet the needs of target teachers, students, and parents, and to make a difference by influencing attitudes and behaviors, end quote. So your little Bobby or Billy or Susie or Kanisha or whatever, your kid or your niece or your nephew, you know, whatever kid is in your life, promoting client objectives is what your child is being exposed to a captive student audience. Now that isn't education, says Susan Lynn, director of a campaign for a commercial-free childhood, one of the three advocacy groups that are trying to fight back underfunded, understaffed, tilting at windmills kind of advocacy groups that are still existent or extant in this country. They still try Friends of the Earth. Isn't that quaint? You and I don't give a goddamn about Friends of the Earth. You're a friend of the Earth. I'm a friend of the Earth, right? We set out our little blue recycle bins every Wednesday or whatever, right? We're friends of the Earth. We don't care. I'm sorry. I know you're a Democrat. I know you're a liberal. I know you're a progressive. I know you try. I know you do little things that you do. So do I. But you know the bottom line? We don't care. Not enough to make changes. We don't care. So anyway, Susan Lynn, director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, said in a statement, promoting client objectives to a captive student audience? In this instance, fourth graders. How old is that? 9? That is not education. It's predatory marketing. She goes on to say, by selling its privileged access to children to the coal industry, Scholastic Inc. is commercializing classrooms and undermining education, end quote. Wow, this woman sounds like an absolute socialist. I mean, really, there's nothing wrong with capitalism. The thing about capitalism, you have to get the little tykes at the earliest stage, because if you don't, somebody else will get them and talk to them about these crazy environmental issues. Global warming, oh my God. Somebody's going to expose them to Al Gore's book. Oh no! Quick! Move! Scholastic Inc. is a $2 billion company whose books and other education materials are in 9 of 10 American classrooms. Last year, the group Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood, the good group, the good guys, that group criticized the company, Scholastic Inc., for its Sunny D book spree. Featured in Scholastic's Parent and Child magazine, in which teachers were encouraged to have classroom parties and collect labels from Sunny Delight, a sugary beverage, to win free books. The Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood has also objected to Scholastic Inc.'s promotion of children's Claritin in materials it distributed into the classrooms. A drug company product, a sugar industry product, a coal industry promotional activity. And you thought your child went to school to learn basic math, how to construct a sentence, and what makes it rain? Oh, my goodness, you are so wrong. More when we come back.
And I am guilty, I am war, and I am the root of all evil. Lord, and I can't drive on the left side of the road. Cause it's a hard life, it's a hard life, it's a very hard life. It's a hard life.
Every day.
Made no mistakes in your life. Be careful of stones that you throw.
he's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So the encroachment by capitalist corporate America, and very blatantly, you know, I'm not so naive as to believe they never attempted this before, but it's getting worse and worse. Corporate America owns our system of government, and we don't care. It pretty much dictates U.S. foreign policy. We don't care. It damn sure dictates tax policy. We don't care. And now it is working insidiously and deliberately to influence, no, excuse me, to own the education system in this country. And it's moving rather rapidly. Scholastic Inc. is a company that, in this particular instance, has worked with the American Coal Foundation to put together curriculum materials for fourth graders. And as you can imagine, it is certainly not, oh, what's the phrase? Oh, that's right. Fair and balanced. Anyway, three groups, Rethinking Schools, Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood, and Friends of the Earth, are all trying to resist the corporatization of the American classroom, and they're really struggling. But you and I don't care. We don't give a damn. Thank goodness somebody's doing it, but I'm too busy to pay attention. The book, the material that the coal company put together with Scholastic Inc. is titled "The United States of Energy." It's designed, as the Times says, to paste a smiley face on the dirtiest form of energy in the world. That's according to Bill Bigelow, an editor of Rethinking Schools. They're one of the good guys magazine. He says, quote, "These materials teach children only the story the coal industry has paid Scholastic to tell." Huh? Now, the material put together by Scholastic Inc. says that coal, here we go. Coal is, you can hear the music in the background, little banjo music, maybe a little bit of brass, kind of like Appalachian Spring, you know, that kind of music. Just, anyway, the materials say that coal is produced in half of the 50 states. That America has 27% of the world's coal resources. Bum, 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 bum. And that it is the source of half the electricity produced in the nation, with about 600 coal-powered plants operating around the clock to provide electricity and the American standard of living. We are, after all, God-fearing exceptionalists. What the material doesn't mention are the negative effects of mining and burning coal, like the removal of Appalachian mountaintops, the release of sulfur dioxide, the release of mercury, the release of arsenic, the monstrous accumulation of toxic wastes in pools that eventually breach their little dams and rush down and envelop entire communities. The mining accidents, the death, the destruction, the lung disease, the cancer, the mesothelioma. Nah, they leave that part out. Well, that's not fair. Mr. Bigelow, who is Bill Bigelow, an editor of Rethinking Schools magazine, that's one of the good guys. Bigelow says the curriculum pretends that it's going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of different energy choices. Fourth graders have an energy choice. You didn't know that?
Alaska and fly into the sun. Fly into the sun. Fly into the sun. I'd break up into a million pieces and fly into the sun.
10 before the hour. So, a lot of talk lately generated by this freak in Wisconsin, this governor who decided to destroy public unions, which included school teachers and others. And all this vitriol being heaped on school teachers by the capitalist neo-fascist right in this country, the corporatists, the right-wingers, the teabaggers, the Republican Party, all of them cockroaches who are undermining and destroying the whole society. And teachers, for the most part, have been taking a real beating over the past couple of months. And the goal, of course, is to drive people out of the teaching business by taking away the idea of tenure, taking away seniority, installing systems to determine whether or not a teacher can retain his or her job based on only one criterion, performance of the entire classroom, which takes into consideration nothing regarding where the child is coming from. What sort of environment? Did the kid have breakfast? Is the kid being beaten or kept in a cage when the child goes home after school? Don't laugh. Is there violence in the home? Is there drug addiction? Are there books in the home? Is it all television and video games? You see, so the teachers are being told, oh, no, it's your responsibility because we Americans, we don't care. You do it. And when the teachers, of course, working under these hideously insane programs like No Child Left Behind or Race to the Top or whatever, you know, whatever the latest incarnation of this garbage is called, the teachers who are working under these kinds of strictures, these kinds of demands, while at the same time being forced to hand out capitalist material, corporatist material, that has nothing to do with education and everything to do with producing a little group of brain-dead, unaware, unconscious consumers. Is it any wonder the teachers are saying, wait, what are you doing? What are you saying? Now consider the idealistic teacher who graduates with her degree, gets certified as a school teacher, and then settles herself into a $30,000 a year job. And she or he does it because he is committed to educating kids. But then there's this great awakening, right? Great awakening when Mr. School Teacher or Miss School Teacher realizes what they're up against within their system, their school system, within their state system, from the public and the government. Meanwhile, they have all these little kids who show up originally, with very few exceptions. There are exceptions, of course, but when they show up, kindergarten, first grade, yeah, you have some kids with lots of severe problems who show up to be educated. But the school teacher takes a look at all these little faces, these 20, 30, 35 kids in his or her classroom. And the teacher thinks, well, this is why I'm here. I'm going to help these kids learn. I'm going to help them develop a lifelong sense of curiosity. I'm going to help educate them. And then when the school teacher finds out after the first year or the first couple of months or the first 2 or 3 years exactly her place in the system that is not interested in the least in educating children, but is interested in turning out like a clockwork system, uneducated, corporate-influenced automatons. What does she do? What does he do? What does the school teacher do? Some of them move on. Well, I've got an education degree. I pick up a couple of years of psychology, maybe I can go to work in the corporate system. I think I'll go back and get into nursing. I've had all the science that I need. Maybe that's what I'll do. Or they stick it out. But the bottom line in all this is that there's no reason for American parents not to understand fully what's going on. This incursion, this invasion into the classroom by these private enterprise corporate structures who provide kids with things like the United States of Energy about the coal industry. There's no reason why any parent who has children in school isn't aware of everything that goes on in that kid's classroom, except for one thing. For the most part, we American parents don't care. And so we turn our kids over to a system designed to keep them uneducated, not curious. Can you imagine a curious kid sitting down with the United States of Coal and raising his hand, or United States of Energy and raising his hand and saying, but teacher, I see this thing on TV all the time about something called it's a lung disease, and all these lawyers who want people to call them because, and the teacher has to say, well now, Susie, that's something that maybe you can talk about in your Sunday school class in church. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.